We're doing Pirkei Avot together with the Jewish Home, and we're up to the third chapter of the 17th Mishnah, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Omer. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, we remember him. He was, by age 18, he was big enough to be the chief rabbi of Israel. He taught the following. Imen Torah in Derech Eretz. Without Torah, you can't have Derech Eretz. We know Derech Eretz is the common etiquette, and we discussed this part of the Mishnah last week. Imen Derech Eretz en Torah. And if a person doesn't have common derech eretz, then Hashem will not let him be successful in Torah. He could succeed in Torah. He could be a big sage in Torah. But ultimately, that sin that wherever he goes, he doesn't behave properly, will cause him to lose his Torah as well. Imen chokhma en yira. Without wisdom, a person can't be a God-fearing person. It takes a certain amount of wisdom to attain that. Imen yira en chokhma. Without being a God-fearing person, you can't attain true wisdom. And we'll explore that in a minute. Imen bina in dat. If you don't have understanding, you don't have knowledge. Imen dat in binan. If you don't have knowledge, you don't have understanding. They go hand in hand. Imen kemach in Torah. If you don't have flour, meaning if you don't have sustenance, the material needs, then you can't have Torah. Imen Torah in kemach. So that's the first quote that he gives us. You can't have Torah without food. You can't have food without Torah. So what's he telling us? I think the simple understanding in the Mishnah is about balance. Very often in life, we have reasons why we think we can go off balance. There's always an excuse. The Mishnah says, long term, it doesn't really work. If a person is going to focus on Torah and say, I don't have to shower, so what if they smell as I'm coming to the Beis Medrash? But I'm dealing Torah. So the Mishnah says, no, imen Torah in derech eretz, but imen derech eretz in Torah. You got a factor that they go hand in hand. You have to know how to be a decent person, and without it you can't have Torah. Without Torah you don't know how to be a decent person, because the refinement of being a decent person, getting it exactly right, that's what the Torah teaches us. But you know what? The Torah only teaches it to someone who has the basics. You got to start with something. You walk into the yeshiva and you don't know the most, the first thing about being a decent person, so better learn how to be a decent person and work from there into the Torah. They go hand in hand. But very often in life, we feel justified to go off balance. And we feel if I'll go to the extreme in one thing, then everything else will work out. And in the Torah and Chazal repeatedly train us to lead balanced lives. Balance could mean that a person is dedicated to a certain cause and that takes priority in his life. There are definitely dedicated people. But even that has a price, Chazal warned us. A person has to know there's a price. Sometimes it's a worthwhile price. Balance is a difficult word because, you know, any person you ask what balanced is, you can assume is going to tell you, balanced is me. Everyone around me, he's off to the right, he's off to the left, and I'm balanced. Everyone views the world that way. That's the way, you know, in general. You talk to people, everyone views themselves as the center of the circle, and to the right of me is too extreme, and to the left of me is too liberal, but I'm in the middle. And anyone else, you know, if they're not where I am, so then they're not balanced. But it doesn't work that way. We had the Mishnayos in the beginning of the second chapter that described to us that we take different things into account when we choose a path in life. And there's a way that we gauge what balanced is and isn't. Within balance, there's a realm of being more pious, less pious, putting more of a stress, less of a stress, but a certain amount of each has to be there. And a person cannot assume, I'll go to the extreme and it'll work. Rava used to tell his students, 2 months a year, I want you guys not to show up to yeshiva, go work, so you could support your learning the rest of the year. So you'll say, how much money could they make in 2 months to support the rest of the year? Obviously, they lived in poverty. But that was the balance on their level, that they needed that much. That's why we have Bein Hazmanim. Why do we take off 2 months a year? The idea stems back, it seems, from the days of Rava, when they used to work and support their learning the rest of the year by working those 2 months. Okay, so for them, that was balanced. You had rabbis who left their house for 24 years. For them, that was balanced. For us, it wouldn't be balanced. You can't just take a Gemara and figure out from the Gemara how to live your life. You have to learn and learn and learn by a teacher and learn. And then you learn a little bit more what balanced is. But the Mishnah stresses in all areas balance. And the Mishnah says, if you go off balance, you should know that you lose. Now, there's a logical difficulty in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, you don't have Torah, you won't have Derech Eretz. You don't have Derech Eretz, you won't have Torah. Now, that's circular reasoning. So how do you ever enter the circle? You know, if I don't have Derech Eretz, I can't have Torah. Okay, so I'll go work on Derech Eretz. But you say, I can't have Derech Eretz without Torah. So I think that you start, the Mishnah says, without Torah, you can't have Derech Eretz. So one understanding is start learning Torah, you'll get to Derech Eretz. Then your Derech Eretz will develop. And without that, your Torah isn't going to last. But the circular reasoning, I think, in some cases, it could be that one refines the other. You could have Derech Eretz without Torah, but it won't be refined without the Torah. You can't have Torah if you don't have Derech Eretz, even though you could have Torah, but the lack of Derech Eretz will ultimately cause you to lose what Torah you've gained, because God doesn't like people who don't have Derech Eretz. He won't let a person grow too much in Torah. So you can enter the circle in either place and then grow, but you have to grow in both. But I think the circular reasoning is important because it's teaching us the other way around. What happens when you have Torah without Derech Eretz? Or Derech Eretz without Torah? So the Mishnah is telling you, if you have Torah and you don't have Derech Eretz, so then it's not that you have Torah but not Derech Eretz. You can't have Torah without Derech Eretz. You mean Derech Eretz and Torah, so then you won't have either one. You can't think I'll have one without the other. It won't work. One of our responsibilities within a marriage is to balance one another. And that requires a certain maturity and an openness to hearing one another when we disagree. Usually, disagreements play themselves out as a fight for who's going to convince whom that they're smarter or that they're right. When in fact, we would benefit much more if we heard one another. Very often when we're on the verge of making an error, so our spouse is saying something and we're not hearing. Part of balance is the capacity to see out of my own circle. We lead our lives in our own circle and we're very convinced that we're balanced. And one of the hardest things is to see that we're not balanced. We have a class on dating. So I always begin the first class on dating with the importance to date out of equilibrium. And we always discuss in our first class on dating that a person has to have consistency in his life and a person has to reach a balanced state, and from there he has to date. And it has to be a period of time, and you should consult with someone that knows you well and has enough experience in life to help you gauge that. I never cease to be surprised at how people can sometimes come and say they're ready to date when they're not. A guy walks in and says, I've been giving Shabbos for 3 weeks straight now. How much more do you want? And you guys are laughing. It's not funny. It's not funny. It's very serious. I got a phone call once from a girl. I never met her. She said she did gear 6 months earlier. I said, and where were you before that? How long were you studying for it? So she says, well, 2 years ago, I was an avid Christian. 3 years ago, I was in some religion in the Far East. 4 years ago, I was exploring religion, and I thought it was a joke, you know. And initially, I thought it was a joke, so I'm waiting for the punchline. And at some point, I said, and she says, and now I know the truth, so now I'm a Jew. So I respect that. That's very nice. But, you know, she has to look at her history and say, wait a second, you've been seesawing all around the world. It's very hard for a person to gauge, and within marriage, it's also very hard for a person to gauge. So I have a rule. Nothing I say in class is pertinent to a specific person. Yeah, I don't want anyone to squirm in their seat and assume I'm talking to them. I'm talking to everyone. These are classes for everyone. So I'm just saying, from the Mishnah, when we discuss balance, we have to know that one of the hardest things to gain balance is when we have to gauge ourselves. And within the marriage, one of the greatest assets that we have is that we have someone else to talk to, and we have someone else to listen to. And we lose that very often because we're not open to hearing something different than ourselves. The Mishnah says, You have to balance things out. And what we began with is that we always have an excuse why we want to go off balance. There's always a reason. It's not like we wake up in the morning and say, now I'm going to go and be a nutcase. We don't do that. We wake up in the morning and say, I had an epiphany. I'm brilliant. I'm a genius. No one thought about this before me. Let me go and do it. And that's when our wife says, no. And we say, yes. And if we're smart, we talk and we listen and we take time. And time is a great tool in life. It gives us pause. You don't have to cut a deal right away. One of the things you guys will encounter is very often people try to pressure you into a deal. It could be the banker who's trying to get you to sign on the loan. It could be the guy who's trying to sell you the house. It could be a girl who's trying to get you to marry her. It could be a lot of things in life. And any good deal can wait another day or another week. And when your boss comes and wants to sign a contract with you for next year, and suddenly he pops a surprise on you at the contract at the table, then you should be smart enough to say, I need to think about that. We were about to sign on a house. And when it came time to sign on the house, they suddenly popped three new clauses on us that we had discussed the contract. And now you're already paying the lawyer for the time. They're paying the lawyer for the time. Everyone came down. And now suddenly they're saying three new clauses, different than what we agreed to. So do you give up on the house or do you not give up on the house? And as we're sitting there, the real estate agent says, you're getting such a steal. If you don't take this house, I'm taking the house. So, you know, it's easy for you guys to sit here and say, take it. You didn't search for a year and a half. But I stopped and I said the same rule I always say. If it's a good deal, it'll be a good deal tomorrow. If it's a bad deal, then I will get burnt by going into it today. And I said, no, I'm going to think this over. You guys can't expect me on such a big deal to make a decision when you just changed 3 points in the contract. Even 1 point in the contract, it's an important point. I'm not saying you're wrong, but I have to think about it. You want to take the house? Okay. But you should know, I told the real estate agent, that I'm going to let other people know that this is what you did at signing. That you, instead of being a broker to help me make a deal, you started competing with your own client. You want to do that? Go ahead. It's your call. But you should realize that word gets around. You want to do it? You can do it. I'm not telling you not to do it. I didn't sign. It's not my house. You can buy it. But do you really think that's your job as a real estate agent? And do you really think that if other people hear this, they'll ever take you again? Do you want to? You do it. Later on, I found out it's the oldest trick in the book that real estate agents do that at signing. When one side is nervous, they say, if you're not taking it, I'm taking it. They don't mean it. They're not going to buy it. I didn't know that then. Okay, you live and you learn.
You're young.
I'm young. That's true. The Mishnah says, Imen chokhma en yira. Without wisdom, it's hard to be a God-fearing person. You're not going to get to being a God-fearing person on the level you should, because part of being a God-fearing person is having an appreciation for the wisdom of the world and the wisdom of the Creator. But then the Mishnah says a tremendously powerful line. Im en yira en chokhma. Without being a God-fearing person, you don't have wisdom. And this is a point that I discuss with guys all the time. On the simple level, it doesn't seem to go hand in hand. You know, it's a pasuk in Mishlei. The pasuk says, "Reshit chokhma yirat Hashem." The beginning of wisdom is being a God-fearing person. And you ask yourself, God-fearing person is about being a decent person. Wisdom is about wisdom. It's two different things. Why can't I be a great scientist without being a God-fearing person? So we have to know that although in wisdom, yes, there are sciences, and you could develop a great scientific theory, when we speak about wisdom, we speak about wisdom that's life-encompassing. And the greatest wise men, when it came to their choices in life, suddenly their wisdom failed them, because it's very hard to make a right decision when all my wisdom is in theory here, and the pretty girl is standing in front of me there. Temptation is standing before me, and the wisdom is standing in back of me. And the temptation is much more real than all the wisdom I've studied. And so we're giving a crass example of a pretty girl, but the truth is, it applies to every area of our life. To the question of how honest I'll be when I report on my taxes, to the question of when I'm present at an operation that goes bad, Do I testify against my fellow workers, my fellow doctors, when I know that at the end I will be blackballed and I will never be able to get another job in a hospital because no one likes a squeal? Or other situations in government positions where if you're going to tell the truth, heads will roll, but so will yours. Do you or don't you tell the truth? And sometimes people's lives depend on it. Well, all the wisdom and all the theory in the world usually doesn't stand up if you don't have yirah, if you're not a God-fearing person. So im en yirah, if you don't have that predicating force, that first God-fearingness to who you are, then it's very hard to attain true wisdom. Ah, theoretical, maybe. But true wisdom, no. We once had a student here that we had this story more than once, unfortunately. Not that we had students here that were fortunate. But the story that played itself out was that it was a student that wrote philosophical works about being moral and kind, and he wrote excellent works. And I was always very impressed with what he wrote. So I got a phone call from the girl who said that he says it's not fitting in his life right now to be a father, and therefore he wants her to commit an abortion. And I went over to the guy and I said, what's going on here? So the guy says, well, and he gives me a whole theory, and I say, wait, buddy, you don't want the kid? I'll take the kid. I hadn't even spoken to my wife yet. I said, I didn't ask my wife, but don't kill the kid. You can tell me all the theories in the book, but that's not a reason. You don't want to be the father? Fine. We'll adopt the kid. And I said, you know, I didn't even ask my wife, but I'm telling you. Later on, I asked my wife. I said, ever again? She said, don't ask. You were right. Baruch Hashem. But where were all his theories? When suddenly it meant he has to stop his life and be a father, and where'd all those theories go? Because life is very difficult. He's right. He's very realistic. To be a father out of wedlock, he didn't even want to marry the girl. He said, I don't want to marry her. Okay, you know, that's a good excuse. I understand. Not to kill a kid. So they have a nice word. They call it abortion today. But what's going on here? Imen yirayin chokhma. If you're not a God-fearing person, then all the wisdom is theory. It's very nice. And although our class is focused on the Jewish home, maybe we'll take a step to dating, although we don't usually do that, because this is a point that people in their dating very often get confused. Very often a guy will come to me and tell me, I'm dating a girl, but she's not going to cover her hair. Is that okay? And I always say, if she didn't grow up with covering her hair, so you have to understand that asking her to cover her hair is like asking you to walk around in pink pants for the rest of your life. How do you feel about walking around in pink pants? You don't mind? Okay, pink with purple polka dots. How do you feel now? Are you going to walk around with pink pants and purple polka dots? No! What's wrong? If I could explain to you a million times why it's the right thing to do, you'll say, yeah, but no one else does. So where she comes from, if no one else does, for her, covering her hair is like wearing those pink pants with purple polka dots. So he'll tell me, but that's not halacha. You know, you're supposed to divorce a wife. You don't have to divorce a wife. But technically, one of the claims a husband can have for divorce, and it's considered a valid claim, is that she's not keeping the Torah. She's not covering her hair. I'm not saying halachically she shouldn't cover her hair. I'm just saying you have to be understanding where she's coming from. Don't tell me, is it okay? I'm asking you, you want her to cover her hair? Well, you're talking to her about something which to her is not so simple. If this is the world she's coming from... Don't just talk to me about covering her hair. I have a different question. How does she make her decisions? Because to me, that's this Mishnah. Imen yirayin chokhmah. I don't care how smart she is. But what is her litmus test for what I do and don't do? Because Judaism has a pretty clear system. You could have this rabbi, you could have that rabbi. Who's her rabbi? We do have a tradition. So a girl could say, you know, I'm learning and I'm growing and I'm getting there. Our history is that when there were big gaps between the guy and the girl, usually they couldn't bridge it. So sometimes the guy was lying. He wasn't so far from where she was. You know, it's always nice to say she doesn't want to cover her hair, but really he didn't care. Okay, fine, you know. We always say dating is about who you really are. It's not about who you want to write on your resume you are. It's the real you marrying the real her. And it's not, no one, you don't have to play games with anyone. You have to be real with who you really are and who she really is. But, although we're all about growth and we respect people and we value people and we give them a chance and That's all true, but when it comes to dating, a person has to be realistic. The question is, I always say, the first question is, where is a person's Yirat Shamayim? And where is a person's, what modes does he use to decide? Whenever people come and ask me, can these two things match? I say, don't give me the example, give me the concept behind the example. How did she come to that decision and you come to that decision? How do you make your decisions? What's your formula for deciding on life's decisions, on Judaism's decisions? That's the question to me. And the question really revolves around the question, where's the Yirah? Now, all of this is, we don't usually do this, that's because most of you guys are holding by dating. So we took a step aside and we spoke about dating. Most of our class is about within the home. You know, once you're married, then you got to figure out how to make it work. A guy can't say, well, she's not a God-fearing person. Right, neither are you. How do you know? Okay, I know. But you're not a prophet. You're right, I'm not a prophet. Okay, but you married her, so let's figure out how to make it work. Once you're married, it's a different story. Then you got to see the positive and figure out how to build together. But when the question is pre-marriage, that's a totally different question. Then you have to remember, the question is, where are we holding on making decisions? And I don't care how smart she is and how much you guys love one another, at the end of the day, if there are going to be decisions that come up, this is a question that will come up a million times and you won't be able to encompass them before marriage. You won't know where it's going to come up. Yes, Bezalel. Yeah, I'm saying if a husband comes to me and tells me my wife doesn't have Yirat Shamayim, then my answer is neither do you.
Okay,
and then he says, well, you're not a prophet. And I say, but I still know. We can't see.
But you can realize that many people, certain things, they don't care.
We can't see. So we don't know.
If someone doesn't give Shabbat like to believe, you can say, maybe they didn't study Shabbat.
Right,
or maybe
right.
Even after studying Shabbat, so if you see that doesn't really work, that why keeps putting like a cold soup on father? After like 10 times you tell her,
so then you got to work, figure out where the problem is, because we know couples where the wife keeps all the mitzvos and the husband doesn't, and everyone knows about it, and they build a beautiful home together. After a couple's married, it's a question of the desire to making it work. The differences are not a reason for divorce, and I don't buy it that she's this and he's that. No. After they're married, the only question is, do you want to make it work or not? That's the only question about making marriage work. Everything else is workable if you want to make it work. There's a couple here, a famous couple here in the neighborhood. Everyone knows about them because they're both, they're famous people. And everyone knows that she was Chozer B'tshuva and he remained where he was. And they're building a beautiful home together in spite of the fact that they're in two very different places. But they can be respectful and build a home. And as a result of that, I think it's a huge Kiddush Hashem that they can do that. And that they have normal children who attend the schools in this neighborhood. And you even know, they're so famous, I guarantee you, you've heard of at least the husband. You might not be aware that this is what his family looks like. But, okay. Onward with the Mishnah. Imen bina en dat. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, without understanding, you don't have knowledge, and without knowledge, you don't have understanding. So, when we talk about bina, we talk about the reasoning behind things. When we talk about dat, we talk about knowing the thing itself. Very often people are willing to be chassidim. We live in a world where people are very often looking for other people to make life's decisions for them. The Torah is not about that. The Torah is about getting tools, getting advice, but at the end of the day, living your own life. That's one of the great things about Machon Meir, that we want you guys to move on. Very hard. When a person's chozer b'tshuva, so very often he wants someone else to make the decisions for him. And that's not what life's about. The Mishnah says you have to have bina, you have to understand the reasoning behind things. You don't understand the reason, you don't even have the da'at. Just to know what it says without knowing why, without understanding halacha, you don't understand. Then you don't know either. It's not only that you don't understand. The nasa has to be followed with a nishma. I do want to understand. It's not just I will obey. I was once by Rav Halberstam Zatzal. I asked him a shayla. He gave me a psak. I started questioning the psak. The shamish said, get out. I said, why? He said, the Rebbe said, that's the halacha, now get out. So I said, but I want to understand why. He said, I told you to get out. And he kicked me out of the lishka. Okay. I went to one of my rabbeim. I quoted the psak. I said over the story. He said, now you see why he's a shamish. I said, what do you mean? He said, he's an amaretz. What do you want? I said, what do you mean? He said, because you were right. What does it mean to know Allah without knowing the reasoning? You could never apply that Allah anywhere if you don't understand the reasoning behind it. So the shamish is an amaretz. So he says, the Rebbe says, that's Allah. Goodbye. What else do you want? That's no way to learn. You want to learn. You understand the reasoning behind Allah. You ask. You question. Imen bina, if you don't understand the reasoning of halacha, in that, you don't even know the halacha. You don't know how to apply it. The whole Gemara is about understanding the reasoning behind the Mishnah. You got to understand. Judaism is about ask, till you understand as best as you can understand. Imen dat, and obviously if you don't have the beginning knowledge, then in bina, there's no understanding. Now it's very tempting sometimes to say to our children or to our spouse, because that's the way it is. Because wives have an uncanny way of asking questions that are at the root of the issue, and we don't have the answer. That's why I always tell people, if you're going to learn Chavrusa with your wife, prepare beforehand. Don't show up at the Shabbos table and say, now we'll have a Seder and learn this. And even though you prepare beforehand, I guarantee you she'll stump you. Those of you who have been at our house for Shabbos table learning know that I speak from my own experience. I get stumped every Shabbos table, every time. And they don't mean to stump you. They just ask questions, you know, but their questions are like at the bottom of things. You say, gee, that's a good question. Wait a second. I don't even know that. Right? I got to get back to you. And the truth is, okay, that's fine. So you look into it and you try to understand. One of the problems is that as men, we always want to have the answers. We view our job as solving problems. And if we're learning together, so then I have to have all the answers. And if I don't have all the answers, so then I'm not the man I want to be. Well, we're not. That's the truth. And we have to be able to live with that and be realistic about it and not play games. I was once standing at a sfarim store, and a husband was walking with his wife, and he picked up sfarim, and he was telling her about what great sfarim they were. And it was very obvious to anyone who was learned that he didn't know what he was talking about. I mean, he's picking up sfarim, one's on halacha, one's on medrash, and he's leaving through them, and he says, this one wrote a commentary on what this one, they're not connected, apples and oranges, you know, totally disjointed. And he's like, if I buy this, I should really buy that. And she has no clue what he's talking about, and she's like, yes, honey, yes, yes. Okay. Guys were standing there, it was a yeshiva sfarim sale. It's like the yeshiva guys were in charge. We were in charge of like setting up the stands and selling this farm. So the guys who were standing around were like holding back their laughs because it was very obvious the guy didn't know and she didn't know that he didn't know. But isn't that sad? Because then he's not really connecting with her. He's playing a game his whole life. Yes, we will be posed with questions that we don't know, but you know, there's nothing wrong with saying, I don't know, let me ask. I'll tell you more than that. Our recommendation is that within a home, you don't be the rabbi. Let someone else be the rabbi. Yeah, I can tell you, in my house, I always say, there's only one person that paskens shailos, and it ain't me. We can ask a rabbi. It's better, because if you represent Allah in your home, so then, very often, you're the antagonist. You say that I have to sift flour, even though I haven't found the worm in 3 years. You say that I can't use lettuce without doing this, this, that, and the other thing. A person should try not to be the rabbi in his own home in many ways. If we ask a shayla, so then I always tell guys when they get married from here, I say, choose a rabbi your wife likes more than you. You have to like him, you have to feel comfortable with him, but she has to like him more than you. And the guys always ask why. Say, how'd you suddenly become such a feminist? And I say, it's very, very simple. Most halachic questions affect her more than they affect you. So if they affect her more than they affect you, so she has to be more comfortable with the rabbi. You have to feel confident. You have to be comfortable with him. But if you have a rabbi that you're okay with and she's great with, go with him. Better not me. Better whoever she is very, very comfortable. Ah, if she's comfortable with me, fine, okay. But I'm hard to reach. Better you get someone else anyways. no, really. figure we have 30, 40 guys graduating from here every year. If every guy is going to call with every shayla, you're never going to get through. So I always recommend go to someone else. You could always come if you want. I hope I'll know the answer. But part of our growth is growth together. And not to be embarrassed of what I don't know. I can prepare. I can try to know. I can try to present. And if I don't know, that's okay. I'm not a fan of learning together on a date, by the way. A lot of rabbis say, learn chavrusa on a date. I say, you're not going to be chavrusas, right? And I don't think she's going to be able to gauge how much you know based on learning together. And the conversation on the date, you'll get a picture. What you do know, what you don't know, fine. What? It depends on how you study. If you're both leaning over the same book, then I can understand it's not so tzinua. If you each have your own book, so it could be tzinua. Learning together?
Yeah.
Look, I don't know. A lot of it depends on the person. I think that if a person is steeped in Torah, then it's very hard to have a conversation with him that doesn't touch on Torah. Torah should permeate his conversation every day and all day. So then you're always going to be talking Torah. What else is there to talk about? I mean, you could talk about other things, but it should all stem from Torah. Fine, I have things I learned from girls on dates. So what? I quote, a girl on a date once told me her rabbi, Rav Sarik, in Ginot Shomron, was told them in the name of Mordechai Eliyahu, that Rav Mordechai Eliyahu held, you're not allowed to wear those red things around your wrist. I didn't marry that girl, but I remember that, because when I learned it in the sixth parak in the Tosefta in Shabbos, I also thought it says in the Tosefta it's Aser, but I wasn't going to tell anyone, because I said, if everyone's doing it, and I think reading the Tosefta that it's prohibited, so what do I know? Okay, I left it as a question mark by me. Then on a date, the girl, I still remember the girl, I'm quoting you, the Rav, she quoted me in the name of Rav Eliyahu, right? Made a big impression on me, so she taught me something on the date. I was so happy on that date. Wow, I learned something good. Okay. What? Yeah, I do. She's married with kids, Baruch Hashem. She doesn't live in Ginot Shimon, but he taught here in Jerusalem. He used to teach here. Yeah, he's a fine Talmud Chacham. I don't think you can say there's something wrong with that as far as tzniut goes. But people have to know on the dat and the binah and the knowledge and understanding in the home and the balance in that. I was once standing by two rabbis who were having the following conversation. One rabbi said to the other, he said, I don't understand. My kids call up a rabbi, ask him a shayla. And when he doesn't know, that rabbi calls me. So why don't they ask me? They ask him. So the other rabbi says, that's a question. My kids call up a rabbi. And when he doesn't know, he looks in my sefer to answer them. But my kids call him. Okay, so what do we see from that? That very often, the way a person's family, his own children or his own wife, the way they're going to perceive things, the Talmud tells us. The rabbis whose own wives went and asked another rabbi a shayla. So that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, although on some level you do want to be imparting of the wisdom you have and of the Torah you have in the home, a person should also be comfortable that a lot of the shaylas are exported. And I could tell you that in my house, 99% of the shaylas are exported. Because it's good. It's good that it's better that everything, there's one source we trust, we ask, and we can live with that. The Mishnah says, "In en kemach en Torah." If there's no flour, a person can't study Torah. And in en Torah en kemach. And without Torah, then what good is the flour he's going to have? What's life worth? Very often in life, we feel like there's a stage for Torah. I did my time. I was in Machon Meir. I did my time. I was in yeshiva. Doesn't work that way. Imen Torah and Kemach. What are you doing your parnasa for? Life is this balance throughout life, like the Shulchan Aruch says in the beginning of Hilchos Talmud Torah. A person has to learn Torah when he's young, a person has to learn Torah when he's old, a person has to learn Torah when he's wealthy, a person has to learn Torah when he's poor. I always say that people after their gear should stay in Machon Meir for a little bit. Because there's this feeling, I did it. Now I know. No, you don't know. You're just starting. Now you're starting. With all due respect, it's an accomplishment. Good for you. Now start learning. Not from here, you move on. You don't want to stay machom here. I'm not saying stay machom here. Go somewhere else. But continue learning. You don't have to stay here. But it's not the finish line. It's the starting line. And Torah is something which, as we saw in the Sefer Midot, it's a tremendous gift that Hashem gave us, that at every stage in our life and at every position in our life, it's something that has to accompany us. Im en Torah en kemach. It doesn't mean you can't be rich. There are rich amaratzim, but what's the point of all the wealth? The Torah gives us the guidelines as to how to lead a balanced and good life. If I feel that I can continue, that's it, now I can move on, then I don't begin to understand what I don't know. If I begin to understand what there is in Torah, then I know that there's a lot to learn. If there's a lot to learn, so okay, I'm just starting. How long was God's presence at Sinai? We just read it in this week's parsha. God appeared on Sinai. How long did it stay there? Shekhinah showed down, Ten Commandments, lightning, thunder. How long did it stay there? An hour, a day, half a day, a week, a month, a year, till now?
40 days.
40 days. What's the next guess? No, going once, going twice, going thrice. What? Sold to 40 days. Okay. Highest bidder. Rashi says in Tanis, says, very interesting sugya. The Gemara says, Rav Nachman bar Rav Chisda met Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, and he invited him. He said, you know, you live in a town where no one honors you. Come live by us. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak said, no, no, no. Respect doesn't stem from the people you're with. It stems from who you are. You should get respect because of who you are, and if you don't get respect, it's not because of the people you're living with. Important rule for marriage. If she doesn't respect me, it's not because of her, it's because of me. We don't like to say that. Rav Nachman Yitzchak answers a very, very powerful line to Rav Nachman Rav Chisda. He says to him, the Shekhinah settled down at Sinai, so Sinai became a holy place. The Shekhinah didn't choose a holy place to settle down on. It's the other way around. Because the Shekhinah was there, so Sinai became a holy place. The Shekhinah leaves, everyone else could go, the cattle could go graze on Sinai. So Rashi over there says, how long was the Shekhinah at Sinai? Rashi says in Tanis, Rashi says, the Shekhinah was there when God came down on the 6th of Sivan on Shavuos, and the Shekhinah remained. And until Yom Kippur, when Moshe keeps going up and down the mountain, right, he spends 40 days, he comes down with the golden calf, he bashes the luchos, goes up, gains forgiveness, comes down on Yom Kippur, and God forgives us. The Shekhinah remains. And every time God talks to Moshe, there's lightning and thunder. Imagine that. 40 days, 80 days, 160 days. They're building the Mishkan. The Shekhinah's still at Sinai. The Shekhinah's still there. Lightning, thunder. I don't know how they slept at night. I don't know how they did it. Every time Moshe has a question, they'd hear lightning, thunder, the voice would come down and tell Moshe an answer. Until the first of Nisan, almost a whole year. Until the first of Nisan, when they inaugurated the Mishkan, and then the Shekhinah swooped down from the top of Sinai into the tabernacle, into the Holy of Holies, and then Moshe got his answers from there. That's what Rashi says in Tanis. I don't know where Rashi got it from. I don't know. It's a discussion in the Gemara in the beginning of Beitza, how long the Shekhinah remained at Sinai, Machlokas Rashi Tosus there, but no one over there goes into the details Rashi does in Tanis. Okay, so now you learned something. Why am I saying that? Because that's a simple thing. You wouldn't have even known it existed, this whole concept of the Shekhinah staying up there in lightning and thunder on Sinai, and it's a pretty basic concept, pretty important, right? Simple. Now you know it. So now it's easy. Okay, next time someone asks you, how long was the Shekhinah at Sinai? You guys know the joke, what's learning Talmud like? Two robbers come down the chimney. One's face gets dirty, the first guy's face gets dirty, the next guy's face is clean. Who cleans his face? The guy with the clean face, right? Because he sees the guy with the dirty face, so he figures his face must be dirty, he goes to clean it. Two guys come down the chimney. First guy, first robber's face is dirty, second guy's robber's face is clean. Which one cleans his face? No? Which one cleans his face? The clean one. No, it's not true. The dirty one looks at the clean one washing it. He also washes his face. So, two guys come down the chimney. First guy gets dirty. Second guy's clean. Who cleans his face? Both of them clean their face. That's not true. That, who? What robber has time to clean his face? Okay. This is a guy who once wanted to explain what Talmud is, learning Talmud is like. Every answer you give, the Talmud says, wait, no, there's another angle, there's another angle, there's a third angle, there's a fourth angle. So now you learned one answer, you learned the Gemara and Beitza, you learned there's a Machlokas, Rashi, Tosas, Tushitas, and Tosas, exactly what happened at Sinai. But if a person doesn't begin to know, he doesn't know the concepts exist. A person has to keep learning. And a person has to know that Imen Torah in Kemach, without Torah, there's very little value to the livelihood and the food and everything else he's busy with. You do as much as you can, but it's a lifelong endeavor. Hu haya omer, he used to say, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, kol shechochmato meruba mimaasav, whoever wisdom exceeds his actions disproportionately, lema odomeh leilan shanafav merubin veshoroshav muatim, is like a tree that has many branches and few roots. The roots give us the sustenance, the branches are the fruits. So you think that's very good. No. A wind can overturn him, as the verse says. But if a person's actions exceed his wisdom, what's he similar to? To a tree that has many roots. We think the roots is the wisdom. Isn't the wisdom the potential for action? Shouldn't you say wisdom is the roots? And shouldn't the fruits, the branches of the tree, be the actions? That's what we would say. No, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, it's the other way around. Your actions are the roots to the wisdom. Wisdom that's not real. If the Torah is theoretical, and I'm not living up to what I'm learning, so then even those actions, they weigh down on the tree, because the tree doesn't have the roots to support them. The roots of the tree are really the actions. The branches of the tree are the wisdom. Sometimes we think, the wisdom, that's what gets me to do things. That's true. When they had a question in the Beis Medrash, which is more important, Torah or actions? Torah is more important, because Torah leads to actions. Actions won't lead to Torah. But then which is more important, the Torah or the actions? We said the Torah is more important because it leads to actions. So it seems like the importance of the Torah at the end of the day is the actions. Yes, the Torah is called Torah Chesed. At the end of the day, Torah that's detached from actions, that isn't even exceeded by the actions, that's not Torah. If the Torah is real, then there have to be actions. People sometimes tell me, I'm in yeshiva. How could I do chesed? I don't buy that. The good morning you say to your roommate is a chesed if you put on a smile. It says, ulven shinai mechalav. In the blessing it says that the white of a teeth is better than milk. If you show a smile, you're giving more than giving the guy a cup of milk. Because to see the white of your teeth makes a person happier than offering him a glass of milk. Because a glass of milk I could buy somewhere, but your smile I can't buy. Your smile tells me I like you, I value you, I'm happy to see you. Ma'asav merubin mechochmato doesn't mean I have to go and volunteer in the Peace Corps, I have to go and volunteer in the Red Cross, I have to go and volunteer in the soup kitchen. No. Ma'asav could be the actions and the way a person lives in every movement that he does. How he cares for his roommate when his roommate's sick. Is he going to get him the food that he needs? Is he going to check if he needs help getting the medication he needs? If a friend isn't there in class, do I call and see what's wrong with him? Why isn't he there? It's not big things, but it's a way of life. It's everything we do. It's when I go down to the kitchen and I see there's a lot of bread, but not a lot of hummus. Am I the one to take more hummus or am I the one to take more bread? It's in a lot of little things of how we lead life, but it's a way of life. It's a way of life that Ma'asav should always be more than Chochmato. Person's actions should always exceed his wisdom. We always have to find ways in which the way we behave, the way we live the Torah, reflects what we learn, and even more so. And then, Lema'u Domeh, what's he similar to? Leilan Shanafav Mu'atin, a tree that has few branches, V'Shoroshav Merubin, but many roots. Shafiru Kol Aruchot Sheba'olam Ba'ot V'Noshvot Ben Mezizin To Minkomot, Mimkomo, all the winds in the world can't budge him. Shneimar, the verse says, "Va'aketz shatul al maim." He's like a tree firmly planted on water. Val yuval yishanach shoroshav, he extends his roots to a stream. Ve'lo yireki avochom, he doesn't have to worry about heat. Va'yaleu ha'anan, his leaves are always lush. Uvishnat batzot lo yidag, he doesn't have to worry about a drought. Ve'lo yemish me'asot peri, and he never stops producing fruit. And that's the way a person's wisdom is when he's always doing chesed. Now, very often we think chesed is about other people. But what about our wives? I have a friend who heads many organizations. He's the chief fundraiser for an orphanage in Israel. He heads a soup kitchen in the United States, just to name two. And he does a lot of other acts of kindness. And he once told me that it was 2 weeks before Pesach, and a new family moved to town, a Russian family. They were just learning about Judaism. And they called him up and asked him if he could come and help teach them how to kasher their oven. So he had some days off. He went over to their house on a Sunday afternoon, brought his blowtorch, and showed them how to kasher the oven for Pesach. Showed them how to kasher their utensils. Spent 4 hours at their house. Comes home Sunday evening. He's got 2 weeks left to Pesach. His wife is panicked. She's all harassed. She's got everything to do, and her kitchen isn't ready. But if he'd have been home helping her with her kitchen, no. So I helped in the house. Now, when he walked out of their house, he felt like the greatest. He's a martyr. Look at how he went and helped the new neighbors and helped them and taught them how you kasher a kitchen for Pesach. And that taught him a lesson. The Navi says, "Umi psachal titalam." The Navi uses a very interesting term. He says, don't ignore your own flesh. Meaning sometimes you have to be reminded not to ignore them. There was once a wife who sent her husband an email. She said, there's a poor widow who contacted us. She said that she needs a few loaves of bread and butter, and she sends him a whole grocery list, and she begged us if we could have it at her house at this and this time tonight. And fine, when you come home, I'll give you the address. It's not far from here. So the husband runs out, gets all the stuff, brings it home. He says, where's the widow? She says, here I am. He says, what do you mean? She says, you're as good as dead. What do you mean? You never buy me the bread I need, the fruits I need, or anything else. I figured I'll tell you about a poor widow, because I'm a widow. You wouldn't do it for me, but you'll do it for a widow. So sometimes we're like that. We could help the neighbor's wife. We could help the neighbor's kids. But our own wife, our own kids, you know, they'll manage. No, the Mishnah warns us that we have to have actions that exceed our wisdom. And we have to remember that those actions are not only about the widow. It's also about the poor widow who's waiting for us at home. It's about our own children. It's about our own homes. And chesed, as they always say, begins in the home. A person has to know how to care for everyone else. And only after his cup is full with what it needs can he think about filling other people's cups. Sometimes it sounds selfish, but a person has to know to do that. A lot of people, when they date, we're shifting to dating again, talk about achnasas archim all the time. They talk about having guests. And everyone is very idealistic, but they forget who's going to do the laundry for the guests, and who's going to do the cooking for the guests, and who's going to clean up after the guests. So you say, yeah, that's par for the course. That's very nice. Are you going to do it? When you talk on a date about doing all these acts of kindness, what are you thinking? You're thinking, I'll be a nice host, and I'll have patience for the guest, and I'll be very nice to them. That's great. And what about all the other work? Avraham Avinu was running out. He was slaughtering the meat for the guests. He was doing his end of the deal. He was doing a lot of the work. Achnas Archim is a great mitzvah. We have to be partners in the mitzvah. And when a husband knows to give enough support and help and love, and then the couple work together on the mitzvos, so then when there's a lot of understanding and the wife knows that they're partners in it, and that when she needs him, he's there, and she doesn't have to beg, she doesn't have to remind him 10 times to take down the blanket she needs, or to do the other work she needs to help clean the house, so then they can be a great partnership in doing chesed. All too often, we have these lofty ideals of having a house of kindness, when all we're thinking about is hosting the guests. We're not thinking about who's going to do the shopping and schlepping all the food to the house, who's going to clean up after the guests leave, who's going to do all the other work that it involves. And I'm a big fan of chesed. That's what we just learned in the Mishnah. But as we said, chesed begins in the home. Chesed is about being partners in the chesed. It's not just about hosting the guests. It's about doing all the other stuff too together. So what did we learn today? Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah taught us about balance. He taught us about the balance between Torah and Derech Eretz. He taught us about the balance of wisdom and being a God-fearing person. Wisdom and understanding. We discussed it as the understanding of why is this halacha this way? Torah and the livelihood. That even in the time of Torah, we have to figure out how we're going to make ends meet. And even in the time of making ends meet, we have to make sure to include Torah. And he ended up by telling us the importance of having actions that exceed our knowledge. That we're focused on living the Torah, we learn on having acts of kindness that by far exceed the level of wisdom that we've attained.